I'm Shachar Azani, and in the news, Israel at war, not just in the south, but up north. As Israel continues to attack Hamas in Gaza, much of the IDF forces there have reportedly left the Gaza Strip, with some reports indicating that they're making their way up to northern Israel. Albeit not in the news that often, Israel's north has suffered immensely in the past few months of war, with daily missile attacks coming from Hezbollah, towns and villages on fire, as well as casualties. Around 10 IDF soldiers and 7 civilians have been killed so far, with more than 300 Hezbollah terrorists killed on the other side of the border. What should we expect from this next phase of the war? And is the north of Israel going to be the next arena? And how is Iran involved in all of this? To answer these questions and so much more, joining us now is our favorite Dr. Eric Mandel. Dr. Mandel is the founder and director of MEPIN, Middle East Political and Information Network. He's a senior security editor at the Jerusalem Report and a prolific writer and speaker who's visited Israel quite a few times since October 7th. Eric, it's always a pleasure to have you joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Let me first ask you, the reports about a withdrawal from Gaza by the IDF, supposedly indicating the end of the war in the south. Is it really? Help us understand where we stand now vis-a-vis Hamas.
Well, the idea that Israel has moved out everything except its Nahal Brigade and is just manning a corridor that really bisects the east-west division about 9 miles wide so they can both strike in the south and in the north sounds to the ears of Hamas and to Iran as this is Israel succumbing to American pressure, and it looks like a victory for Hamas, at least at this phase of the war, especially with the president and the administration saying Israel cannot complete its job and destroy the last 4 to 6 battalions that Hamas has in the south.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has reportedly said that there is a date to enter Rafah. We've been saying that word Rafah for so many months now. How do you see the next phase? Do you agree that in practice Israel has halted the war, or do you see it as just another temporary phase before Israel engages the Hamas battalions?
Well, I think if Israel is going to come out of this looking as a victor in the next phase, I'll call it phase 3 of the war, it is going to need to enter Rafah. What America wants Israel to do, to just do airstrikes or pinpoint operations, will not be enough, because that's going to go on for weeks and months and years, and the America and the international community will have no patience. Israel should have, and I had spoken to the Israeli government, and they were not listening, to have started the humanitarian movement out of Rafah 2 months ago, and that they should have gone in. And once it's done in a fait accompli, then you have Hamas on the run, and then you're dealing with the mopping up of the insurgency. Right now, with them being so intact, including their leadership being intact, and they're moving slowly back into the center in the north. In fact, Hamas is controlling, even back in Khan Yunis, it is acting as the civil guard that's going on there right now. And the people, when they see Hamas still there, any people that might not want to support Hamas for their own lives are not going to say anything. So Israel has to go back, has to go into Rafah in one way or another. But the contention right now is the Biden administration can't see that Bibi Netanyahu and Israel government are not one and the same thing. But what they really need to know is that if this was Gantz or Lapid, they would be doing the same thing. However, America would give a lot more leeway to Israel to finish off Rafah if Bibi wasn't there.
Right. I mean, it's quite staggering to think that people confuse the situation as if it's a direct result of the Netanyahu administration. But the truth is, just like you say, that's a demand by the Israeli people who are not willing to go back to living in the south with Hamas remaining intact. And yet I want to ask you something, Eric, with your expertise. Yes, indeed, the IDF needs to eradicate Hamas, but the long-term vision is not for Israel to be managing the civilian affairs in Gaza. And as long as there is no view or idea of what's going to happen to Gaza beyond that eradication, we're still in that limbo when Hamas police officers are governing Khan Yunis. How do you see the future of the Gaza Strip in this regard? What do you say to those who claim, as I said?
Well, I think Israel, by not articulating a plan and maybe working in more conjunction with the United States, has hurt itself because Israel has operationally done an amazing tactical victory over Hamas, even though it has stopped at Rafah, what it has done up to there. But you're dealing with having destroyed less than 50% of the tunnels, maybe 40%, and that you have much of the leadership still intact. Israel has to think the day after. Right. What is the choice? If you just leave, anarchy. If you leave, Hamas comes back. If you go in and occupy it, the last thing the Israeli people want, you may be able to control it, and maybe you can have an occupation that you have like in the West Bank and transition it to some reform Palestinian authority, or much better, you would wish you could have a NATO or Gulf states or Egypt or Jordan being involved, but none of those people want to be involved. The PA is not trusted by the Palestinians. NATO wants to have nothing to do with this. The Gulf states and Egypt and Jordan want to run as far away as possible. So of the least bad option, and to allow the people of the Gaza envelope to return to their homes, I think Israel is going to have to occupy this and maybe have control some of the civil administration there if you don't want Hamas to do that. This is going to be an insurgency there. It's going to be ugly. And, I have to say that if that's what's going to be needed, it would be better not to have Prime Minister Netanyahu there, who will be continually blamed by the Americans from an international perspective. But there'll be, again, a little more leeway if that's the scenario that has to occur, if you have Gantz or Lapid or some type of unity coalition going down the road.
But at the very least, having those discussions between Israel and different countries around the world is in and of itself a message to Hamas that it has completely lost Gaza and it's no longer considered as a viable entity to control the Gaza Strip, as opposed to what we've seen in the past 17 years. Isn't that also an important message?
I think Hamas does not think they've lost. I think they, like Iran, has what's called strategic patience at this point.
Right.
They think they outlast Israel, and the Americans will continue putting pressure on Israel to stop, and that they can survive. And once they survive, they are a root that's planted there in Rafah, and they will grow from that root, and over time they will take over the Gaza Strip.
Right.
And once this war is over, Israel's not going to want to go back in except for pinpoint strikes. So they have to really be thinking right now, what is the day after? The administration has been correct about that Israel, they don't believe, has planned well enough for the day after and the years after.
Right. That's the situation in the south. And indeed, I share your hope that we will see a different direction. But when it comes to the north, we've seen the Iranian Revolutionary Guards that have been active in Syria and Iraq and Lebanon with Hezbollah and others for years. We have seen the targeted assassination against the Iranian Revolutionary Guards leadership in Damascus. How do you see this as another escalation in the war between Iran and its proxies against Israel, the U.S., the moderate Sunni states, and the West?
So I was told by one of the senior national security advisors to Netanyahu that why this occurred at that time. There's been other opportunities. So why now? Supposedly two red lines were crossed. One, that there was a direct strike from Iraq into Eilat, and the quantity and quality of weapons going into the West Bank to Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad had crossed some Israeli red line. And that's why this attack occurred at that time. Now, if you believe that this is on Iranian soil because it was part of the consulate, which is kind of a little ironic considering if anybody knows the history of Iran, and you go back to 1979 when they violated the American embassy and took the hostages, but now they're pleading that this is part of their
diplomatic immunity.
Right. So they have diplomatic immunity. But you got to remember this person who was killed, the lead person, this general, was not only in charge of Iran to Lebanon and to Syria, but he was also in charge of the Palestinian sphere. And so that gets to the question about the arms going into the West Bank. Now, how does that term for what goes on in the North? Well, their number one ally in the North is, I shouldn't say ally, the group that follows exactly what the Ayatollah says by
Right.
guarding the jurist is Hezbollah. And they have preferred, that has been their method, to use their proxies. And it could be the Houthis, it could be Hamas, it could be PIJ, a popular mobilization units, militias in Iraq, against Israeli targets. I don't think American targets, and that could be any place in the world, or it could be in Israel. And Israel has made it clear that if it's targeted from Iranian territory, it will respond there. And the places, if they wanted to, if Israel should respond back, I think if it is to Iranian territory, which would be a much stronger message, would be two places. I believe we discussed in the past Bandar Abbas and in Karg Island, places where their trade and the fossil fuels come from to cripple their economy. And if the United States says they want to have, we have ironclad, we're behind, that's what the president said, behind
Right.
Israel. I think those are words. I don't think the Iranians believe it. But if America really wants to be ironclad and backing it, you make it clearer to decrease a regional war that America is willing to use kinetic force against Iran if they cross and have a significant response against Israel for our interest, American interests.
Right. We famously remember that at the beginning of the onslaught, after the massacre, President Biden and the administration sent the aircraft carrier to Israel to send a clear message of don't to Iran and its proxies. Do you anticipate that happening, or do you recommend that happen?
Well, first of all, I have a counter argument there. I think the Americans sent, my country sent the carrier strike force from the Ford carrier to inhibit Israel from starting a regional war. And that has been, and remember, in a political season, the number one thing this administration wants to do and for domestic politics is not to be in a war. A war plays into the political opponent of Biden, which is Trump, forever wars. So they will do everything and anything. So I think the moving of the carrier group there was to inhibit Israel from there. But I know the message was it was to inhibit Iran and Hezbollah.
You look at Iran's negative role in the region, and you and I have spoken about this many a time. The understanding that as long as the Islamic Republic is ruled by the mullahs, as long as their ideology is very clear, they will take advantage of any opportunity to achieve their, like you said, long-term strategic goals, whether it's the Middle East, whether it's the world. Now they've used Hamas. We've seen it's a group that they've supported. We see the role that Hezbollah plays, by the way, not just vis-à-vis Israel. Look at Lebanon and its destruction. We're seeing them active in Syria. We've seen them active in Iraq. We're seeing them supporting the Houthis in Yemen. So they're like a time bomb. As long as they're ticking, the region may be up in flames. It may not happen now, it may happen next month, in a couple of years, but that's their end game. When do you think the world may realize that and decide to act against the source of that destabilizing force, or if at all?
Well, I'm not optimistic about the world community coming to the realization that Iran is the major problem of the Middle East. And if you allow to be pro-Iranian, to allow the Iranian people to have their say and to
Right.
be in charge, that whole region, I'm more than willing to bet that that will be the outcome, would be much better for everybody in the region and lower the flames and advance American national security interests. This president has shown that he is more likely to appease Iran. We do not enforce our oil sanctions against them. They're selling almost an unlimited amount of oil to India and to China, which is enriching not only Iran and allowing it to survive, but to support its proxies, which are undermining our primary ally in the region. It should become American foreign policy in an administration. I can't tell you this one or the next one, but sooner or later, that we need to be pro-Iranian people, and that this current Iranian regime is against American interests, and that we need to actually show a backbone and not just have rhetoric against Iran. As far as Europe, I have no confidence in Europe doing anything other than the maximum appeasement. They are more than happy to be in bed with Iran as long as they feel Iran is not targeting them. They are more than willing to sacrifice Israel. But my country should change its tune and have a major strategic reevaluation of how to effectively deal with the Islamic Republic, which is rational as a revolutionary entity that wants to destroy Israel and destroy the West and America. And that is who and what they're about.
Right. You know, we're talking about the chances of a war in the Middle East, a wider war between Israel, Iran, and the proxies. And I think one of the things you've written extensively about is the message that the weakening of the Israel-US alliance may send to these elements. Do you think that that criticism that came from the US sends a message to Iran and its proxies that this is the right time to strike at Israel?
Well, I don't know if they're going to use that alone, but there is no doubt when they see daylight between Israel and the United States, that shows American weakness, that you don't stand with your allies, and it shows it as an opportunity to take advantage of what it is, most likely not directly from Iran, but to use its proxies even more. But again, at this point of time, I just don't think it's in Iran's interest to turn this into a major regional war, because I don't believe they finished with the weaponization program for their nuclear weapons, or they have plenty of material of uranium that they can turn into in 90% enriched uranium in just days' time. But they don't have the means to deliver it yet via the ballistic missiles, which it has, because they haven't gotten to the compartmentalization part of that. And the guess, and again, it's a guess, is it's under 2 years until they do that. But everybody's taking, you know, from what I've heard from the Israeli government, they used to meet twice a week about Iran, specifically about the nuclear program. And those meetings have been put on hold because of the Israeli total focus on the South and in the North. So the idea is, I think we've taken our, both America and Israel, taken its eyes off of their nuclear program. And Iran is getting everything it wants out of this Hamas war.
The long-term vision that you're portraying, Eric, is quite scary, because if this is a situation before Iran has nuclear weapons at her disposal, what's going to happen once it passes that threshold when it comes to the ability to deter the Mullah regime?
It will become more emboldened. There is no doubt when they really are a threshold nuclear state, when they really, everybody feels that all they have to do is turn the final screw on a nuclear weapon for it to be active. I think, you know, it will change everything because everybody will be fearful. That is why Saudi Arabia was hoping that the United States would sign a defense pact with it. But, I don't think people really trust the United States to be there for them, especially you look today, it's 4 years, since we left Afghanistan, the Taliban is back in place. It's been since Trump time 5 years ago, since we never responded to the Aramco attack directly from Iran. We are not that trusted. And if we abandon Israel, that is going to, again, empower, embolden Iran to be more aggressive. And where do they have their eyes next? Their eyes next are on Jordan. And that is a strategic place for America. And if Jordan becomes like Syria during its civil war, and that's what Iran would like, and they can have influence there, even though that's a Sunni country with Shiites, think about Syria. Shia is run by Alawites with majority Sunni, but Iran controls Syria. You look at Lebanon, it's only 45% Shiite, but Iran controls Lebanon. Jordan is on there to complete the ring of fire against Israel. And then who else do they want to destabilize? Gulf countries. So all of this goes totally against American national security interests and improves the axis of resistance. That's Iran, Russia, and America's number one nemesis for the 21st century, China.
Do you think that that message is being shared discreetly, maybe in between the capitals of those moderate Sunni regimes that we're talking about, whether it's the Gulf countries, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Washington, D.C.? And do you think that their interests align with those of Israel at this point vis-a-vis Hamas?
You know, they give a lot of lip service to Hamas, to being supportive of the Palestinian people, because that's what they need to do, because they have radicalized lots of their societies. Scapegoating Israel is a way to deflect attention from their authoritarian regimes and mismanagement. But what do they really want? Hamas is radical Sunni Islamism. It's jihadism, and is supported by radical Shiite ideology from Iran. They are fearful of all of it. So with, if you're Saudi Arabia, you fear the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the father of Hamas, and you fear Iran, which is the Shiite leader and that wants to control the whole world there. So they're quietly cheering for Israel to win, and they're quietly cheering to hope America stands with Israel, because they know if America doesn't stand with Israel, they become much more vulnerable.
I want to go back to the North for a minute. We're talking about the potential of escalation in the North, but like I said at the beginning, the North has been suffering immensely in the course of the past few months. We're talking about tens of thousands of Israelis who can't go back home. We're talking about Hezbollah, vile terrorists who are firing anti-tank missiles into people's living rooms, killing them while they're having lunch, targeting businesses throughout the place. Cities like Metula and Kiryat Shmona have become ghost cities. So in actuality, Israel has been engaged in a significant war up north that's been widely ignored, don't you think?
Right. So if there was not a war going down in the south, this would be considered a major regional war. So you're absolutely correct. Thousands of projectiles have gone back and forth. Israel strikes into Lebanon since October 7th, because Hezbollah became active, are so much more. So this is a very active war. It's not a, you know, people refer to as tit for tat. People are dying. There are 100,000 people who are displaced from their homes. So how does this end? So you have a few possibilities. Very unlikely that through the president of President Biden sending Amos Hochstein, that he's going to convince Hezbollah to withdraw to north of the Litani River, which is what the UN Security Council demanded after the second Lebanon war. The French proposal, which is 10 kilometers, a very short distance north of the border that the Radwan forces move back to, is something Israel would accept. But I don't think the people of the north would accept that, because they are going to be vulnerable. And especially if there's drip, drip, drip of missiles coming into the north, that's not what they signed up for. And if Israel is going to be a sovereign country, it's going to have to be able to control the border right to the border and let every citizen live there who wants to live there. Will that be possible without doing a major operation there? I'm not sure, but temporarily you might be able to get it to be quiet, but the people of the North don't want to go back to a status quo on October 6th. They don't believe they can trust that. You remember, Israel was distracted from the South primarily because what happened in the South is what they thought was going to happen in the North with the Radwan units coming in, infiltrating communities there. So the operational intelligence failure in the South actually had something to do with the North and the preparations that were there, and underestimating your adversary in the South, Hamas.
But let me counter you on that point for a minute, Eric. The idea that Amos Hochstein's diplomacy and a diplomatic solution and an agreement, even if Israel engages in a war with Hezbollah up north, what's going to be at the end of that war? There is going to be potentially the same thing, right? Engaging diplomatically to bring an end to it. Maybe it's the UN Security Council. Maybe it's Amos Hochstein and the Americans. Maybe it's somebody else, the French. But at the end of the day, won't we reach exactly the same point where we have to negotiate, unless the vision is for Israel to take physical control over the territory? How do you answer those who say the only way forward is have to be an agreement, and the decision that needs to be made is whether it happened before hostilities or after the increase of hostilities?
Yeah. You know, I think the day after is much hotter in the north than it is in the south, and we know how difficult the south is. So what are the possibilities? Israel accepts a condition that is like pre-October 6th, but they move a little farther north. Israel is going to look weak there, but they may look at it as just buying time. If Israel goes in operationally, there is nobody to hand it to. The Lebanese armed forces, they're either inept or complicit
Right,
with Hezbollah.
right.
To the UN, the UN has stopped zero of the 150,000 missiles in the last 17 years that is there. They see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I mean, the UN is more, it does more harm than good
True.
to a large extent that's there.
Very true.
So you basically have a situation up north where you in Israel, remember, from Israel controlled southern Lebanon from 82 to 2000, and popular demand to allow that to stay in place evaporated with Israeli soldiers being killed there. And so they had to leave after the, you know, after 18 years there. So I think up north, that's why Israel is willing to accept the unsatisfying 10-kilometer movement up
Right.
north. But to believe that Radwan won't be, remember, there is a tunnel network that may be more sophisticated in southern Lebanon. Underneath it, you have tunnels there that go into Israel. They've discovered a lot of those. Who
Right, they
knows how many?
have.
You have ambush tunnels. You have explosive tunnels. You have tunnels that go underneath almost every town that's there, and missiles in people's homes. And you have major tunnels that go from the Bekaa Valley to Beirut down to southern Lebanon. This is a much more sophisticated adversary
Right.
that's going. And by the way, Israel's not going to have more, you know, 6 months to do what it needs to
Correct.
do, and it's going to need to go.
Not to mention the human shields. You have Radwan forces embedded within every civilian infrastructure in the southern Lebanon. So even if they do go back 10 kilometers, they may still be in civilian outfits embedded within those villages. So I completely understand.
I saw that when I was embedded with a unit looking at intelligence pictures, looking at civilian homes where you had Hezbollah, you know, in those civilian homes. And again, just like Hamas, they commit war crimes because many of them have no distinction in dress,
Right.
so you don't know civilians or not. And again, you know, one of the think tanks I work with, which is fantastic, called ALMA, the go-to think tank in the north, they have documented many, many times how they have positioned themselves all throughout Lebanon, next to civilian areas, next to schools and UN facilities and mosques and electric plants, all things that the world community will come down on Israel if it attacks legitimate targets, again, embedded in civilian areas.
Eric, we're lucky to have you trying to remove some of the haze and mist around such a complex situation in a very complicated region. Thank you for the time you've taken to share your insights with us.
My pleasure. Always for you, Shahar.
Always a pleasure to listen to Eric Mandel, and always wonderful to listen to the wise analysis provided by Eric, making sense of the complexities we face today in the Middle East, but so much more beyond. And to all of you, our viewers, we will continue to keep you updated as things move forward in Israel and across the world. This is why we are here, and this is our commitment to you at JBS. May we see better days soon. I'm Shachar Azani, and thank you all for watching.